Plant on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. I am joined now by Lauren Wheatman. She's written a new book called A Woman Trapped in a Woman's Body, Stories from a Life of Cringe. The Los Angeles Times says the book is, quote, relentlessly candid introspection combined with a ferocious wit, and that it is. The book consists of essays about her life thus far, including a fascinating chapter on her hiring and departure from The Daily Show, which she joined as a correspondent in 2001. She appears regularly on Comedy Central on programs like Reno 911, and I saw her not too long ago on a talk show with Spike Feuerstein. And folks here in the Vancouver area might have remembered her on King's Almost Live. The book retails for $20.95 and is published by Sasquatch Books. I am pleased to welcome Lauren Wheatman to the Plant on the Line program. Good morning, Ms. Wheatman.
Good morning. $20.95.
That's a pretty good price, isn't it?
I think that seems high.
Does it really?
I mean, totally worth it. They should charge $22. But I guess that's Canadian $20. That just seems so. But anyway, not a problem. I shouldn't immediately be like, oh, don't pay it.
It is, yeah, it is $20.95 Canadian, $16.95 American.
Oh, that seems high, too.
Are you in Vancouver this past weekend. Are you in Vancouver still?
I am. I am currently in, I was at that outdoor Word on the Street Lit Festival, the radius day in 11 months, you know, yesterday.
That was pretty good luck on your part, I guess.
I know, super, super lucky. Then you get the super diehard book people. You know, you don't get people who are just, like, wandering by and decided to stand out in the rain. You get folks who are like, I've been here every year for 13 years.
And this book that you wrote, how did this come about?
It came about because I was doing a solo show, which I'm wont to do, and Sasquatch is a publisher in Seattle, and one of the editors from Sasquatch approached me after a show wanting to know if I ever thought about, because I do so much autobiographical content in the solo shows, if I wanted to write a short story book or a book at all, if I was ever inspired to put my stories down on paper that way. And I said I could be inspired if they paid me $90,000. No, if there, and then I did want to do that. And so it came right at the time where I was actually thinking, I think I'd like to write a book and I want to prepare for my old age.
And in terms of it seems to me that it's instructive on a couple of levels on what to do, and I guess more what not to do.
I know there's. I've had some interviews where this woman this morning was saying, "God, you know, read this book if you want to feel a lot better about yourself." And I, for one second, I was like, "Geez, it's like you know, sit, whatever." I was like, "What a thing to say!" I'm like, "God, that's so true, though." I bet it would make you feel like, oh, I feel really good about my life.
Is it one of those things, though, that looking back, that if you had it to do over again, you would make a lot of different choices, different changes?
Yeah, and I feel like life always, I feel like I've gotten the chance in one sense, I mean, not on The Daily Show, but I'm in other environments, of TV environments where there's a king of the hill involved. You know what I mean? Other, you know, where you're around, stars, I guess. People who have a lot of power, or are given a lot of power. And yes, I know how to behave now when the king or queen is in the room. I know that you're not supposed to sit right next to them and be like, I had the weirdest night last night. You know, that you're not supposed to launch into personal things when you're in a work environment and people are trying to get stuff done. Yeah, definitely. I did a ton of, but I was super naive, right? I came from, like, theater, and then suddenly I was on this wonderful TV show. And I was in theater. You know, everyone sits around like massaging each other's feet. You know, we're very. It's like a big commune. And then suddenly I was on TV, and I didn't realize there's some hierarchy things that I wasn't very, very good with.
And how long were you on The Daily Show for?
17 years. No, I'm still on. I have to go. Actually, they just called me. No, like I'm crazy. I was on for a year.
And it, in the book, it seems awkward, it seems uncomfortable, and you seem troubled.
Yeah.
whose fault was it, do you think?
Mine. I don't care what people, because now I have some folks, you know, after reading it, were like, oh, John sounds horrible. And of course, you know, John is just Jesus right now. He is so incredibly, important and popular and, you know, and politically important, all this stuff. And I still love him. I think the show is incredible. But it was definitely, and people will be like, oh, I'm so disappointed to read that he was horrible, and that he treated you that way. And for me, I cannot think, it's like a bad marriage. It's like, I don't know who did what wrong. All I know is that I was so the minute I got the job, I was like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Oh, my God, I'm going to get fired. So I came into that situation thinking everything's going to fall apart. And then I made it happen. So I definitely think it was my fault. And also women in comedy, not always the easy. I mean, I'm always the only girl.
Which it seems that it is it harder, do you think, for a woman to be funnier than a man?
Yeah, I don't think it's as much. It's not as, yeah. Yeah, and it's not that you don't really want. I always have this feeling like when a girl walks in the room, people aren't like, God, I hope she's hilarious. Like, I always feel like that people, when a girl walks in, is like, I hope she's either, you know, going to be my mother, my mistress, my, you know, like, they want different things from the ladies. And humor is not always one of them. And, because I would walk into environments where everybody else was, like, on The Daily Show or other comedy environments, where everyone's like, I can't, I won't be crude, but, like, you know, telling crude jokes and being really nasty and being really, like, just very free and over the top. And I'd walk in, like, okay, ready to play. Like, I wanted to play, too. And suddenly I'd make the exact same joke. And coming out of my mouth, they were like, whoa, Lauren, anyway, so how was your weekend? Like, you know, they didn't want me to play in that same level. So I think it is harder for girls. And plus, women, at least I'm much more of a emotions rule a lot of my day. And my night, actually. You know, and it's harder.
Do you think Jon Stewart liked you?
I had someone the other day come up to me after a show, a solo show, come up to me and say, who worked with me. And she was like, what if he, like, you know, I think it was a crush. I think he really had a crush. And she was kind of kidding. And then I also tell people all the time, like, it was so hard because he was so in love with me. What do you do about that awkward situation? He was married. I don't know if he liked me. I'm not sure. I think that I try to imagine what I was, like, when I'm trying to get something done, like, if I'm in charge of a job, if I'm the head honcho of a situation, and someone comes in who's super hyper and so thrilled to be there that they won't shut up, I won't hate that person, but they will tend to, you know, you will sort of be like, calm down, bring it down a level. And I think that, I think he liked me okay. No, he didn't like me, I don't think, actually.
Was he the same off the air as he was on the air?
No. Do you think he listens to your show?
I don't think so.
Okay, well then no, he was completely different. There, it's out. No, he's the only, the thing that would, because I don't want to, because you know the whole thing of like, oh, he's so self-deprecating, like, you know, oh, we're just a little cable show, we're just a bunch of little guys doing a little funny, you know, like it's not a big deal. But he knows there's no way not to know he's got that kind of power. And things were really ratcheting up when I got on the show. Like, 9/11 had just happened, so things were getting, I was like, things were getting hilarious. 9/11 had just happened. No, but things had gotten really, you know, and he was basically, like, winning, his office was full of awards, and things were getting more and more intense for him, you know, the power he was having.
You were on the show at a time when Stephen Colbert and Steve Carell were on the show,
yeah,
correct?
The Steves, I know.
And what was it like to work with them?
That was good. That was all good. I liked them a lot. I mean, the Stephen Carell is, super polite, super nice. He's like an actor. He's a comedy actor. Like, he's one of those people that off camera is not super on. Like, I always approached him, too. Like, he'd be, like, super fun to play with. Or be like, hey, Steve. And he'd be like, and how are you? How are you? You know, and he was very sort of formal and nice, but it's really, really sweet, kind, good, you know, good guy. And Stephen Colbert was much more of a hyperactive, like, bad kid, but fun. I don't mean bad, like, you know, the good, fun, bad kid, the one you want to sit next to, but much more exactly how he is on, you know, not that character he plays, but very hyper and very, that was a really, it was a totally fun time, but I did feel sort of, there was no other girl, like, the only other women that worked on the show was, like, the makeup lady, you know, or the guy, that, or the one woman who, like, would get the lint off of John's jacket before he went on the air. Super hard job she had.
Did you find it hard to write about this time, knowing that perhaps they would read this?
No, and that I only now do I have any pangs of abdominable. Super bright. You'll see that in the book. I have stomach cramps over it because it's like, because people have asked me actually just for press stuff where folks are like, are you worried about, you know, making people, right at the beginning of the book, pushing away Daily Show fans by, and to me, I'm not a journalist, I didn't write an expose, and they're also heightened, they're not completely true. They're true, but not, you know what I mean? Like, I exaggerated stuff for the sake of a joke. It's based on truth, all of it. No, I didn't. When I wrote about it, I'm not thinking I'm writing anything that big of a deal. I'm thinking I'm writing my story. Like, they know that I got fired. I know I got fired. And for me, it was not like I'm blaming them. I'm basically saying I could not get it together in that environment. And doing a little bit of a commentary on what it's like to be the only girl in the Very Funny Boys Club. And people wouldn't give me, the Daily Show people, when I did ask one correspondent to give me a blurb for the book, you know, give me a comment, and he was like, I'm actually still working for John, maybe that's not a good idea. And that also made me think, oh my God, like, is this, you know, bigger than I think I say good, I mean, he comes out, I don't know.
He doesn't come out as an ogre, no.
No, he can't, no, he does, and it just makes people, it's just such a hot, to me it's just another story. It's like, for me it's just as equal to all the other sort of ways I've undermined myself, you know, like through my marriage, my, you know, my dating life, my, all this stuff. It's just sort of all the ways that I've sort of hilariously destroyed things that have been offered to me, and it's just a funny story. It just happens to be a funny story about the date, because I could have written about Almost Live as well.
You write in the book about your marriage. It's a chapter in the book. You were married to a bartender named Matthew, were you?
Well, his name isn't really Matthew.
Well, that's what it says in the book, so let's go with
weird.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, Matthew. Let's call. I know. I have to remember who is called who. John, of course. I should change John's name. Yeah, I was married to a bartender named Matthew.
And right. And the marriage did not go so well. You seem to say that you had a role, a significant role in destroying it, even though you wanted it to work. Would that be a correct assessment?
Yes. I try to take the role of me as the destroyer in every story, only just to also play it safe. Like, you know, you're supposed to, in a very therapy way, like, you know, don't blame others, like, look at yourself. I do tend to do that when I'm writing the stories, too. I try not to go after, because who knows? I mean, sure, I had moments of like, it's him! It's that evil bartender! But I, you know, yeah, I definitely played the role of that was all in the same time period, too, you know. It was a great year, 9/11, the divorce, the Daily Show. Woo!
But in terms of relationships, you're in a stable relationship now, are you?
I'm okay. He hit me, I'll tell you, because I trust you. But you know what? I was not behaving. I was all over the place. I would not sit in my chair, and he hates that when I kept falling out of my chair because I was drunk. No, I don't. I'm in a relationship now that's good. In fact, I talk about that relationship in the book. I'm living with a, refer to him as a widower. I'm sure he'd be proud to be known as the widower and his teenage son. I live with them.
There's a terrific scene in that book where the son, Jack, he's 14.
Yeah.
And he asks you to spell a word.
Can you say, you wouldn't say that on this, though, right?
We can say anything. Just what was your feeling when he asked you? I mean, you felt something that I don't think you'd felt before, had you?
About feeling like that I actually am an adult in someone's life, that I'm actually the responsible person?
Right.
Yeah, except it's... Yeah, that's so... Look at me, I'm laughing. I'm like, oh, that book. I just even think about it, I'm laughing. Yeah, that's true, because... I, in a sort of this time period I'm writing about in the book, had not really believed myself to be much of an adult, and that every time I try to be an adult or take on something, you know, that I sort of destroy it. And this was when he came to me asking, I feel like I can't say it.
No, go on.
Okay, all of a sudden I'm embarrassed. I'm like, I think it's too far. I don't think I should have written that. It just spelled the word, I'm also in a lobby, spelled the word queef. Very common word where I'm from. Everyone's like, oh, who queefed? I'm also doing this interview in a business lobby, and people are like, who did queef? He asked me how to spell that word, and he was so naive about it, as if he didn't really know what it meant. And he was like, how do you spell quiff? And I was like, oh my gosh, first of all, it's queef, and it's a double E in there, okay? You want to do a Q, a W. And I remember thinking, like, that he was comfortable enough to ask me something that's kind of, you know, gross and personal and female and stuff. And then, and that he was coming to me. I felt all responsible. Yeah, that's true.
And
turn point.
It is a turning point. It goes back to something you talk about at the end of the book, and it's a chapter on finding your mother. You grew up in a family. You were adopted, right?
Yeah.
And
I was. Go ahead.
That wasn't a traumatic experience.
No, it wasn't.
Was it?
No,
it was actually pretty healthy and.
Yeah, it was fine.
Well,
I'm sorry.
And your adoptive mother, she helped you find your birth mother.
Yes. Is that odd? It's odd because I didn't really get along with, like, the whole time growing up. Oh, we got along. I just always thought, like, I used to think that my mom and I weren't close, that she didn't get me, and that we were, and I'm sure every teenager feels. And then when she did the search for my birth mother, like, it seemed like she was doing the whole thing just to embarrass the, like, it just seemed that she was trying to get me. Like, she truly went undercover. Like, she would leave the house in disguises, which I really didn't believe she was doing it. I'm like, she's just putting on that blonde wig and those glasses, and she's just coming in to get a reaction out of me. And the whole family was so entertained by my reaction, how embarrassed I was, because she would come in with, like, an overcoat on, like a detective jacket on or something. Like, she was playing, and Murder, She Wrote, it just come on the air, and she's obsessed with that show. So she got really into being this detective and trying to find my birth mother, and she'd come in and announce how she's like, I'm undercover, I have a lead, you know, and then she'd take off for the day. And she really was doing it, which is a little kooky, but then after a couple of years, it actually paid off. She actually found, I mean, she bribed somebody to type my name up in, like, a hospital records or something.
And
$50.
And you found your birth mother. Do you have a relationship with her now?
I do. We're dating. So, that's another book, I guess. I just realized it's a whole great subject. Because I didn't grow up with her, it's not like I know her. Anyway, I am not, so I'm basically saying I'm a lesbian, I'm an inbred lesbian, no. I have a great relationship with her. I know her really well, and I've known her since I met her when I was 19, and I know she had three kids who were younger when I met them, and so I'm just their older sister. Like, they don't even refer to me as a half, you know, and it's pretty sweet.
This book, you seem to go to tell your life story, and it seems to be full of angst and neuroses, and you seem to have gotten over it all. Do you think you have, and how did you do it?
I don't know that I got over it all. It doesn't seem, I'm not troubled by, I mean, as I said, people read the book, I'm like, oh, you feel better about yourself. Maybe because as an artist, as an artiste, that I use so much of my own personal life. I'm not super creative about coming up with fantasy situations. Like, I'll definitely do that for humor and such, but I tend to mine from my own life. So it's deep self-examination, the self-absorption level is truly a problem. I'm not medicated for that. And it should, like, when I was first writing the book, I was like, oh my God, every sentence I start every sentence with I. And, like, that's so telling, and so it's so, again, self-absorbed. But that is also, you know, a life unexamined, is that kind of thing. I definitely feel like I'm always, because the shows I do are I'm going back to moments that were traumatizing, so I get to sort of look at those moments over and over and over again. And you usually, once you examine something, learn something, grow from it. So that kind of stuff, I think, is, I do feel like I feel pretty okay now.
You referred to yourself as an artist, an actress. Do you think of yourself as a comedian?
I don't, but I know I am. You know what I mean? Like, I don't... I guess it's like being a supermodel, but you don't really plan on it. You just happen to be pretty. Because when I was younger, I definitely knew that I was funny, because I was also pretty heavy when I was in high school. Not to say that immediately equates funny. It was like, well, I was fat, so I had to be funny, so they didn't take me out to pasture and shoot me. I had to prove my worth, so I had to be funny. But when I was younger, I was into the fact that, yeah, but I wouldn't want to do stand-up or anything. I just thought I'd be in, like, funny plays, or I was fun with my friends. But now, and I like the material to be everything, much like life. I don't want it just to be comedy-based. So I don't like to play, I don't want to do comedy clubs or that kind of thing.
Well, would you do a dramatic play?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, and all my solo shows are not just, I mean, they're comedy, but they're never, like, I'm not a joke writer, put it that way, you know? Like, I couldn't write jokes for somebody else, or I do these, like, talking head shows a lot. They're on in America, these VH1 talking head comedy shows, where you just have to give commentary on life or, you know, on pop culture. And I will, some days I go in, like, one of the complaints I've gotten from the producers is that I'm inconsistent. And I'm like, but I'm not always funny. It's like, I don't always, like, what a horrible thing for a comedian to always have to try to be funny. That seems so irritating. You know what I mean?
Right.
To always be, I don't know, that, the whole comedy thing, if someone says someone's a comedian, I think, oh, God, here comes Joe Irritating. Oh, that's your name, but that's different. That was just Joe, the basic Joe, okay. I didn't say Joseph. But you know what I mean? Like, it just makes me think, like, don't let that comedian sit next to me, because usually it's the most broken, of course, that is aspects of myself, too, but most broken, you know, messed up people, my people.
But besides the work that you do on Comedy Central, on VH1, well, what are you working on now besides promoting this book as well?
Well, I'm still doing, I always do the solo shows, and I have a show right now called Bust that I'm doing. I'll be doing a run of it in L.A., and I'm doing a couple tour dates around on the East Coast. And Bust is about, I was a volunteer at the jail, the L.A. County Jail, and it's about that experience. Hilarious. And about, like, bad women and that kind of thing. And so I do that always. And, of course, I make millions of dollars from doing that. It's incredible, the money in theater. And so I'm set. And then I'm also writing a TV show, which I've never done before, based on some of the stories in the book. And I'm writing a pilot, which is kind of just feels like I have a temp job. Like, I actually am, like, I never have stable money coming in. And so writing this TV script feels like, oh, like, this, I feel like I'm actually have a job for the next 4 months.
Is that the goal for people in your line of work, to be on television?
A lot of people it is. I've never said it is. For me, I just want to be able to, my goal is control, is power, is to be in situations where I get to be that's why I like the book. So I'm like, oh, I get to sit alone. I don't have to work with anybody. I mean, an editor. I can do it over email. I don't have to see her. I like the sort of, you know, isolated lifestyle. My goal is to be able to create stuff that's around sort of writing and also get to perform it. And theater is my main goals, but TV is, again, it's not my main goal just because you know that TV sucks. And so you always know it's never going to be pure. It's never going to be exactly what you want it to be. So to me, it's just like, it's a good way of, I don't know, it's a new challenge for me right now, put it that way.
Would you write more books?
Yeah, definitely. That I would do. Especially after I read this book, and I'm constantly like, give me the marker. Who wrote this? Or no on this? And why didn't you? Like, I'm already, I mean, that's what's so frustrating about the book is, well, I'm stating the most obvious thing in the world, but it's like, it's done. You know, where I'm like, God, I was doing a reading the other day, and I was reading a line out loud, and I'm like, who the hell wrote that? What a cheesy line. I'm stuck with it. I can't believe I compared that person to fruitcake. It's so common. Or that's such a cheesy, and I was like, oh, Lauren. But that was, but then there's other parts of the book. I have to just, when I'm doing readings, I have to put it down and applaud myself. I'm like, Lauren, incredible. Okay, I had to say something positive.
And how did you write the book? Did you write on a computer?
I paid my friend Brandon to write it, and I'm doing a tour. No,
but
sorry.
Did you write on a computer? Do you write longhand? Do you spend time, like, we have writers on all the time, people who write novels and so on.
Right.
And they say that they, you know, work from 9 to 5. And
I know. I had to do this thing where I had to always surprise myself into writing. Because if I knew I had to write, the first thing I'd say, I can't do it. I won't be able to do it. It's too hard. I can't do it. It's not going to work. People are going to see what an idiot. I can't do it. Like, I was very self-defeating every time. So I have to sort of trick myself into writing. Where I'd be like, oh, I think I'll just go out for a run. Or, oh, I'm at the computer. Okay, here we go. Like, I had to always sort of, like, surprise myself and start working. Because I like to, I don't work 9 to 5 on the writing. Because I like to have the same energy I do when I perform. I wanted to bring to writing. In the sense that I wanted to be able to write in my own voice. And so, and I wanted to not get bored while I was sitting there. Like, I wanted to feel the energy going, you know? Like, I couldn't, No, I didn't write for... I did write on the computer, though. Yeah, I wrote on the back of a brick with a stone. I am... it's the most authentic way. I'm doing the workshop on it right now. It's
with the tuba lipstick, right?
With the tuba lipstick. It's so incredible. I'll tell you something. That's what the muses sing to me. And tons of rewrites. But mostly I would, like, go away for a weekend. Like, I'd make a big deal and tell everybody, like, don't call me. I need 4 days alone. And then I'd spend 4 days, like, drinking too much coffee and then having to come down from that and then thinking, oh, energy drink. I still drink an energy drink. Having an anxiety attack. And then going on a run, and then thinking I'll start the next day writing. So a lot of avoidance. But eventually, amazingly, the stories were, you know, told.
This may seem like a stupid question, but do you laugh at your own jokes?
Oh my God, like a problem. That's actually a problem. It's funny you'd ask that. Because I have a Dutch friend who, every time around her, she's like, Lauren, you always laugh at your own stupid jokes. Like, enough, why are you always laughing? And I'm like, I don't know. I do. In fact, I was watching a documentary, Tarnation. Have you seen that documentary?
No.
There's about a guy's mother who's mentally ill, schizophrenic. And she, there's one scene where she's laughing at these really weird things she's saying. She thinks she's hilarious. And I had this moment of relating to her. And I was like, oh, she's severely mentally ill. And I have moments where I'm laughing a lot at myself, which is good and bad. Tensions of mental illness, because she really was. And some of the things, I was like, God, I do that sometimes, where I'll be the only one laughing. I'm not proud of those moments. Maybe more drinking is involved in that. But, yeah, I'm not, like, sitting at the computer like, oh, Lauren, you clever dog, you. But, yeah, and I want to be entertained. That's one thing, is that I have the same thing with when I'm performing on stage, that if it's something that I would be bored myself, then I... It's something with the book. I want it to be something that I would like reading. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I want it to be... And I know what kind of stories I like to read, and I know what I like to, you know... Anyway, I tried to do something that I find entertaining, so yeah, I guess I laugh sometimes.
Well, Lauren, I really did enjoy reading this book, and I've enjoyed having you on today.
Thank you.
And continued good luck with it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
The book is called A Woman Trapped in a Woman's Body, Tales from a Life of Cringe, 2095 from Sasquatch Books. Incidentally, Lauren's website is laurenweedman.net. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plata.